which was supposed to protect them, shown to be helpless. How can the Arab countries not be fearful of Israel? Huckabee finds ample reasons for Arab concern. The call to expel the Arabs, however, is tantamount to calling for the de-Arabization of territories that are today Arab, and this makes the conflict symmetrical. For the Arabs, fighting Israel then becomes an existential imperative. The Arabs of the neighboring countries cannot remain apathetic in the face of a possible expulsion of Arabs from the West Bank, if only to prevent their countries from being flooded by Palestinians. The mere beginning of expulsion would cause Israel's peace with Egypt to collapse overnight. The conflict would become a matter of life or death, and this would impel the Arabs to unite despite all their divisions. Any attempt to expel the Arabs would result in international repercussions of unprecedented scope, and an all-out war on the part of the Arab states. This trend toward making the conflict symmetrical is to be found not only in overt statements about transferring the Arabs, but also in threatening remarks about Israeli intentions to expand into the territory of Arab countries. Such utterances have appeared in Israeli publications. In a similar vein, are expressions of Israeli intentions to impose a Pax Israelica on the Middle East, to dominate the Arab countries and treat them harshly. A gross example of this is an article entitled A Strategy for Israel in the 1980s, by Oded Yinon, which appeared in Kivunim, a journal published by the Information Department of the World Zionist Organization in February 1982. It is not surprising, given the auspices under which it is published, that Arabs attributed great importance to its content, and assumed that it expressed the views of official circles with regard to Israeli policy and goals. The article had wide repercussions in the Arab world, a fact that testifies to Arab feelings of vulnerability. Emphasis supplied, are the Arab nations being unreasonable in not wanting a Pax Israelica in the Middle East? The question which deserves a serious answer is, who is threatening whom? Huckabee discusses further the impact of Yinon's book. Yinon goes on to describe in detail how to partition every Arab country, according to geographical and ethnic consideration. One wonders at the temerity of the editors who published an article in the organ of the World Zionist Organization describing how Israel will partition the Arab countries. Perhaps the failed Israeli attempt to impose a new order in the weakest Arab state Lebanon will disabuse people of similar ambitions in other territories. Be that as it may, a symmetry has been created in the ideas of the two parties to the conflict. The organ of the World Zionist Organization presents a detailed plan for the destruction of the Arab states, albeit in an elegant fashion, and presents this as a prime strategic goal for Israel. In doing so, it provides the Arabs with retroactive legitimation for their goal of destroying Israel, presenting their struggle against it as a life-or-death conflict. Emphasis supplied, anything more provocative, or calculated to create fear and anxiety in the Arab countries, can scarcely be imagined. Moreover, there is nothing that the Arab nations hear from Israel that is in any way reassuring. They know that the Arabs are identified as Amalek, an enemy to be destroyed, and its memory to be blotted out. The article entitled The Commandment of Genocide in the Torah, referred to in the previous chapter, was not something found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, but in an article written by Rabbi Hess for Israeli university students in 1988. Spokesmen for the religious extremists are condemning the Israeli government for being too timid in asserting its military power. They boast that Israel is stronger than all the nations of the Middle East, which the Arabs do not deny, that Israel should be afraid of nobody, including Russia, and that Israel's problems could be solved in one swift blow against its enemies, if the government would just do it. The Arab nations are not exaggerating their vulnerability. They see themselves defenseless against the Israeli juggernaut. They can expect no help from the US, which is rendered powerless by the Israeli lobby. The Arabs have the moral support of the world, which, however, is small consolation. They see the UN helpless to implement its resolutions. They see human rights violations flaunted by Israel with impunity. In 1948, and again in 1967, the Arabs could see clearly that the promise of the UN, to the effect that Israel's boundaries would be fixed and guaranteed by the UN, was false. The assurances made by the UN to the Palestinians that they had nothing to fear from Israeli expansionism were meaningless. it became apparent that Israel had never intended to abide by the boundaries established by the UN partition resolution. It is obvious to the Arabs that Israel has accomplished exactly what the Zionists had said all along that they would accomplish, namely, the conquest of all of Palestine. The Arabs see the religious extremists, encouraged by the Likud, openly claiming the biblical right to all the Arab lands from the Nile to the Euphrates. The rabbis and the Likud have made no secret of the fate of the Arabs under Israeli rule. They are to be subject peoples ruled by an iron hand, not fit to associate with Jews. Israeli children are being taught all about the Holocaust and their duty to wipe out Amalek. Thus, this poison is being dispensed at all levels of Israeli society, from the synagogues and universities, to the kindergartens. The mind of a child, or of anyone else for that matter, cannot absorb the horrors of the Holocaust without finding someone to hate. Since there are no Nazis around against whom vengeance can be sought, Begin, Shamir and Sharon have solved this problem by calling the Arabs the Nazis of today, and a proper target for retribution. If there is any doubt in anyone's mind that this poison has become systemic, the survey of the opinion of Israeli youth quoted earlier should remove it. As we have seen, the World Zionist Organization has presented a detailed plan for the destruction of the Arab states as a prime strategic goal for Israel. It may be that Israel is already preparing for this. The Israeli government announced on September 9, 1989, a new 5-year military budget which included $500 million per year for the cost of suppressing the Intifada. The government report went on to say that the reason that a multi-year budget is being submitted, rather than an annual one, is that it is necessary in order to counter growing threats from the Arab world on an increasingly high-tech battlefield, Israel and the United States versus the world. Very little has been said or written about one of the most remarkable incidents in the field of international relations in recent history. In December 1988, the US refused to grant a visa to Yasser Arafat to allow him to address the UN General Assembly convened in New York City. The UN General Assembly responded by voting 150-2, US and Israel, to adjourn its session and reconvene in Geneva, Switzerland, for the sole purpose of hearing Arafat. This decision involved moving the representatives of nearly all the peoples of the earth more than 3,000 miles to hear a speech by the leader of the Palestine Liberation Organization on the Israeli-Palestinian problem. Yet the Israelis and Palestinians together number less than 0.2% of the more than 5 billion inhabitants of the globe. Who is this Arafat person? Is he a spellbinding Demosthenes or a Cicero that the world is so eager to hear his voice? Not at all. He is, in fact, just a little bald man, half-shaven, said by the Israeli government to be a terrorist, rather inarticulate in English, and wearing a sort of napkin on his head. There is none of the charm or poise of a Sheikh Yamani. He has, however, certain distinctions. Ariel Sharon has asked to have him assassinated, and recently one Israeli peace activist was jailed for 6 months for having talked to him. How is this extraordinary, almost bizarre, phenomenon to be explained? Is it possible that anti-Semitism has now infected 1 billion Chinese, 800 million Hindus, and all the multitudes of the other peoples of the earth who have never heard of Abraham, Moses, Jesus Christ, the Nazis or the Holocaust? Why this unanimous repudiation of Israel and deliberate humiliation of the US? Can it be that the cliché, as David Shipler calls it, that everyone is against us has become a self-fulfilling prophecy? If this is really true, some person in Israel ought to have the common sense to ask why. Some reasons are, of course, evident. Although Israel owes its existence to the UN, it has been a somewhat ungrateful child. A few examples come to mind. Israel has, as have all the members of the UN, subscribed to the foundation principle of the UN, the inadmissibility of acquiring territories by war, yet Israel has virtually doubled its size by conquest. Israel accepted the partition resolution of the UN, which provided for two independent sovereign states in Palestine, one Jewish and the other Palestinian, but Israel had no intention of remaining within the borders established by the UN or ever permitting a Palestinian state. Israel originally accepted UN Resolution 242 calling for a return of the occupied territories on the West Bank and Gaza.